If you think it's getting crowded where you live, take a closer look at countries like Bangladesh, India, China, even Colombia and Pakistan. They lead the list of countries with the densest metro areas in the world. Coming up today on Travel with Rick Steves, NPR's Steve Inskeep explores the issues that massive urban growth poses for how we all live. We'll hear what he discovered in Karachi, Pakistan, a megacity whose population has just exploded in the last two generations, and what lessons it can teach all of us in the cities we call home. Or would you rather be left alone? We'll also talk with Scott Wallace. Scott was part of a National Geographic team that went deep into the Amazon, where your GPS is absolutely useless. He'll tell us what it's like to follow the tracks of an uncontacted tribe. It's a delicate balance between guarding their isolation and dodging poison arrows. Let's start with another part of the world few of us ever get to experience. More than 70% of our Earth is covered with water. What kinds of worlds lie under the surface? Diving enthusiast Amanda Castleman says it's like plunging through the looking glass. She's a freelance journalist based in Seattle. She's enjoyed scuba dives all over the world. Amanda, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Rick.
Amanda, when you talk about breaking through, plunging through the looking glass, where did that come from? I just love that image.
Well, I grew up on Samish Island, north of Seattle, and had always sort of run up and down the beach, you know, on the sort of surf logs and the mud flats, but I'd never really thought about what was underneath Puget Sound in particular, where we live. And it looks very cold and foreboding, I think, from the outside, but once you get under, it's all of this jade light, it's forests of bull kelp, and some really dynamic animals like wolf eels, which kind of look like underwater Muppets, 8-foot-long ribbon of underwater Muppet. So there's quite a bit down there and a lot more color than you might expect looking from the outside.
When you go diving, you look up at the surface of the water.
And the light sparkling down through.
And
yeah.
What torpedoes by?
Well, around here, you might see a 6-gill shark, a wolf eel. Sometimes sea lions come up. This hasn't happened to me, but a sea lion will come up and actually put its mouth over the back of divers' heads because the bubbles.
Well, it likes the bubbles.
Yeah, they tickle its mouth.
And I love that, the swords of light that come through the water.
The shafts, yeah, especially when you get a forest of bull kelp coming up through and that light slanting down.
Now, when you swim in a forest of kelp, is it kind of creepy or is it?
Well, you need to be a little careful not to get tangled up.
Seriously, you could get tangled in the kelp.
Yeah, that's why people wear dive knives. I haven't been tangled in kelp, but I did get tangled in like a crab pot line down in the Channel Islands and was lucky my dive partner was nearby and just came and unwrapped me. But, you know, people certainly do occasionally get nervous in situations like that.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Amanda Castleman about some of the wonders you find when you break through the looking glass and you go underwater. Now, you wrote an article which was just wonderful called Calm as a Hurricane's Eye, talking about diving in Honduras. What do you mean by calm as a hurricane's eye?
Well, at the time, I was freshly divorced. And I think a lot of people get sort of that giddy sense of freedom. I was sort of having trouble being measured in my approach to life, shall we say. Everything needed to be turned up to 11. And that's not what diving is about. It's about being still, observing the animals, moving gracefully in this medium. And as soon as I certified, I was following my yo-yo dive buddy who was going up and down the water column, which is exactly what you don't do because it injures your ears, I think you know from your diving. I just felt like there was sort of a bigger lesson about sort of having a second gear and not always taking things 0 to 60 that Honduras helped me learn. And I think that was a hard lesson for me. I was in my, I guess, late 20s at the time. I think for a lot of people, downshifting like that and just observing instead of talking, being physical with your environment, to just observe, that's kind of a real gift. A lot of diving is about grace and stillness underwater. I mean, I think we think of it as a very sort of extreme macho sport.
In fact, you wrote that sometimes counterintuitively, you don't need to be some sort of a bodybuilder to be a great scuba diver. You might need to be a bodybuilder to climb a mountain or climb
Absolutely.
A rock face.
Mm-hmm.
But to dive.
Diving is more about breath control and stillness moving through the water. First of all, you don't want to scare off the animals you've gone down there to look at. But often you'll see tiny little women. In the case of Pacific Northwest diving, some of these ladies are going to the water with 100 pounds of gear. They've got twin tanks on their backs. They're carrying maybe 35 pounds of lead weight so that they can descend. And big, thick dry suits with, like, fleece pajamas underneath. So you'll see these tiny little, like, 5-foot grandma going down the beach with all of this gear. And when she's in the water and that weight's being supported, she can outmaneuver.
She's like a ballerina. Almost.
Absolutely, yeah.
Give me a sense of place here in Honduras. I love the way you talked about the soundtrack down there and sea turtles with stubby limbs starfishing by and cleaning out your mask with a snort of bubbles.
Yeah, this was my my first open water diving experience. It was when I certified. And I was most struck. There's a lot of reefs where you can swim in and out of these shafts of light. And when you're down there, you'll hear parrotfish kind of chewing the reef. And they're actually producing the sand that falls down to the bottom.
Why are they chewing the reef?
I believe they're eating the algae that lives inside the coral.
Okay, and there's just a little collateral damage to the coral itself there.
Yeah, but it almost forms like this sort of reggae downbeat when you're under the water, which was not what I expected. I'd sort of anticipated serene silence or like a, you know, BBC Earth soundtrack or something. But Honduras, I mean, I think for me was most notable for two reasons. One is I'd had this longstanding dream of becoming a diver. As a child, I wanted to be a Navy SEAL. Had not done enough research to understand that women couldn't be Navy SEALs and was horribly disappointed. You know, I guess Demi Moore got to do it in G.I. Jane, but I didn't get to live the dream. However, my cousin did become a Navy diver, and he passed away, I guess he was in his mid-20s, from a childhood bone cancer that caught up with him. So it was a couple years after his death. Part of why I certified was to feel closer to my cousin.
And you got that certification in Honduras?
In Honduras, yes. And it was quite fun. I was later out on an assignment for Sport Diver, and I ran into a set of his friends, like deep out in the Pacific in Micronesia. And in fact, one of them had his fins that they'd taken on a commemorative world tour.
Oh, that's beautiful. And then you wrote in your article about a pod of pilot whales that surrounded the boat as if it was a benediction. Explain that.
That was the other really tremendous thing. I'm sure it was coincidence, but it felt like more than that. Right after we came up from our certification dive, I handed my fins onto the boat. You know, there was a little round of applause because it's always a nice moment when you have newly certified divers. And this extremely rare pod of pilot whales surfaced, and some of them were crossing underneath the boat. It was almost like a drill team, kind of converging from different sides on different layers. They were cresting. And we stopped and floated for, must have been a half an hour. I turned to my instructor and said, "How often do you see this?" And he's like, "The boat coming out from the resort, the accountants on there." Like, that's how exciting this is.
Everybody so, dropped what they're doing, went out to see this.
Absolutely.
And that was sort of the blessing of your certification, sort of inspired by your cousin.
That's what it felt like,
that's
yeah.
That's a beautiful thing. And then you're slow, you're graceful, you're tuned in, you're focused, and you find this submarine Grand Canyon.
Absolutely.
Tell me about that view.
Well, I think probably the most awe-inspiring views of that sort happened out in Palau in Micronesia. And that's an area that's known for big, steep drop-offs, like underwater cliffs, basically, where you're looking at beautiful coral to your left and to your right. The whole Pacific Ocean is stretching out.
And this is an organic cliff.
Oh, yeah.
Generation upon generation of...
Yep. You've got, say, bedrock and then, you know, coral reef topping it with, yeah, untold generations, centuries of coral.
And even underwater, there seems to be an appreciation of the sun.
Yeah, it's just sparkling right down through it.
And these coral reefs are sort of reaching for that, aren't they?
Absolutely. You get big, flat lettuce coral plates that can be up to, you know, 6-7 feet across, basket corals. Mm. Sometimes it looks like Disneyland, like in places in Palau. You'll get these bright psychedelic colors. You also see a lot of World War II wrecks down there. So, you know, old Japanese gas masks.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're speaking with Amanda Castleman, and she's a freelance journalist who writes about scuba diving all over the world. She teaches travel writing for a web company called writers.com. And you can check out Amanda's work at her website, amandacastleman.com. Amanda, in your article, you wrote that Anthony's Key Resort in Honduras is one of the world's best scuba centers. So if you're a scuba diver traveling all the way to Honduras or Guam or whatever, and you want to choose a resort as your base, what makes a place like Anthony's be one of the world's best scuba centers?
I think one of the most important factors is choosing the environment you want to dive in. Somewhere like the Galapagos, for example, where I've not been, but it's tremendous diving, but it'd be very challenging for a new diver. A place like Anthony's Key has very protected pockets of reef. It's very sheltered. So advanced divers can go get their thrill with the open blue water. Mm-hmm. Of course, the risk there is always that you can get sucked out into the great big blue water. There's basically a playground of nice beginner reefs near a place like Anthony's.
And how do they cater to scuba divers that would travel a long ways to be staying at their place?
Anthony's is fantastic. It's the dream of a dive resort with the sort of shacks out over the water on pilings. And you're, you know, 2 minutes away from the dock where you're going to load up all of your gear. It's been assembled for you. You hop in the boat.
And at night in the bar, you've got divers from all over the world hanging out, drinking, telling stories.
Yes, there is, with the cheap, I believe that was Salva Vida beer down in Honduras.
And what I was struck by in reading your articles, Amanda, is the constant surprises you get. And one thing that was very striking to me was one of your favorite places was actually in Utah.
No one was more surprised than me. I went out there chasing a story about retired Las Vegas showfish. When fish aren't quite pretty enough for the casinos, they get retired out to the Bonneville Sea Base, which is near, of course, the speed racing facility where they set the world land records.
Showfishes? What's that?
Showfish. They're fish that swim around in the lobbies of the casinos.
You know, really?
The big lobby
So they get
tanks.
Old and droopy and they say, hey, it's time for you to go to Utah.
Yeah, they get retired. They get farmed out.
They don't just flesh them?
No.
They take them to Utah.
Which
okay.
is much nicer.
Where do they put them then in Utah?
Yeah, well, this is the Bonneville Sea Base. It's a series of connected lakes with geothermal vents down at the bottom. And they discovered that because of all the salt left behind by the Great Salt Lake, you know, drying up and shrinking, it's left behind a pretty saline environment about like the Caribbean Sea.
So that's good.
It's great for
so you
these
got, it's
fish.
It's hot springs. It's salty. Tired old Las Vegas fish. They
exactly.
kind of go there.
And they've got, at this point now, nurse sharks. They've got spotted rays. And in fact, they had the only inland shark bite incident.
So it's a created environment then.
Yes, it is. And in fact, they have Burning Man. The only official Burning Man event in Utah is held. So you have skinny dippers mixing with retired Las Vegas showfish. They've got the little mollies that can give you the fish pedicure, like
oh,
in
yeah.
between your dives. It's a pretty kooky place. And you're out there on the salt flats where there's like hermits.
Got a little Burning Man buzz going on. You got some fish nipping at the calluses on your toes. And you got your retired Las Vegas showfish. Nothing like scuba diving Utah.
Pretty unexpected, yeah.
Amanda Castleman, thanks for joining us.
It's been fun. Thanks.
Share your favorite dives with us in our radio message board. You'll find it in the radio section at ricksteves.com. Next, we go to the urban jungle of Karachi and to the most remote reaches of the Amazon. It's really where the wild things are. It's just ahead on Travel with Rick Steves.